Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Edler, then to Horvat at the slip. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slip. Pettersson scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Not enough goals, the golden goal. We'll get into all of it here on Canucks Central today. It was comeback night in the NHL. Somebody forgot to tell the Canucks. There were a lot of comebacks last night, Bick.
Whew.
And Vancouver looked at two different times during last night's hockey game like it was going to join that party. Not so much. Just didn't get there. And I said this to someone last night who asked me on social media. Canucks got what they deserved. There are games, and they've had them before, and they might have been able to fashion another one last night where you get better than you deserve. They were close to getting that. If they had won that game, it wouldn't be because they were the better team overall or because they came to play against the Ottawa Senators. It would be because of the talent disparity. And that's okay. You don't apologize for that, just like you don't apologize for good goaltending. But they didn't get that last night. They didn't get enough good stuff at the other end as well. Ottawa was the better team.
Oh, full stop. Absolutely. And what did we sit here yesterday and say? At this point of the season, you can't have those 25-minute games where you rack up three goals in the power play and you skate out 4-1 winners. You can't have those at this time of the year. This is about building good habits. And did we see many good habits outside of the top line from yesterday's game? Like, up and down that lineup, you could pick apart anyone's games.
I thought the top line was pretty good overall.
Yeah, yeah.
JT Miller was great. Pettersson had some excellent moments.
Outside of those three guys. But you could have went out and shredded a lot of the guys. There was a lot of glaring mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And they each had one moment where you're like, really? That's what you're putting forth tonight? As you're getting ready, you're 20 games away from the playoffs, when you can kind of put your foot down on being a Pacific Division qualifier for the playoffs. You can slide into that 2-3 seed really nicely and kind of cement your spot. That's what you want to put forward. And again, like, this is about, they have a cushion, but this is about building up that cushion and giving yourself a margin of error and an opportunity when you should have gotten 2 points. And now it just gets a little bit tighter because you missed opportunity.
Subway text message inbox is open. People using it already. 650-650 if you want in. This one comes in unsigned. Hey, guys, I believe they should have won last night. Ottawa's goaltender held down that game. Really frustrating to watch. I agree to disagree. It was one of those games where the puck should have gone in multiple times. Hoberg makes very nice saves.
Yes.
He was better than Thatcher Demko. And but Demko isn't the only reason they lost. It's Hoberg, to me, was representative of the game on whole. Like, across the board, like, overall, Ottawa's forwards overall were better than Vancouver's forwards. Ottawa's defense overall better than Vancouver's defense. Ottawa's goaltending overall better than Vancouver's. That's how I saw it. And yes, Hoberg made some nice saves. That doesn't mean the Canucks didn't leave it too late. It doesn't mean the Canucks weren't sloppy with the puck. How many missed passes or mishandled passes were there in last night's game?
Ton. And how many missed defensive rotations? Like, Thatcher Demko made some pretty big saves in that second period. Like, after the two goals went in, you know, he did his fair share after that went in. There's the breakaway versus Brown. There's the one-timer versus Brown. It's like he was fair, you know, good enough from period two onwards.
Don't like the first goal.
Oh, yeah, the first goal was rough.
And don't like the fourth goal. Those are the two goals not a huge fan of. Down a little early, Bobby Ryan goes upstairs on the insurance goal.
Yeah. You know, based off of Steven Valiquette's metrics, which we talk about a lot, those cross-ice passes are the biggest measure of success. The other ones that are very difficult to stop, the behind the goal line to in front, and it's changing a goalie's vision, right? We'll talk about it with Aldi as well. It changes his vision. How quickly do his eyes match his feet, and is he able to push out fast enough? Is he able to cut down angles? And, yeah, he just doesn't do it. But this is the thing to remember. It's like, this is what development looks like. There was a great text last night. I'm not sure if we read it on air, but I read it late. It's like we were kind of spoiled from what we're seeing from Markstrom because we're getting close to a finished product. I'm not sure if he's fully done yet, but, you know, we're getting elite goaltending night in, night out. This is game 30. Like, I know it's been a while since he's been drafted and he's gone through a lot of development himself, but at the NHL level, this is what development goaltending looks like.
Two goals on four shots is the reason we lost. Can't argue that one. Demko is the reason we lost. Well, we can and we will. Mm-hmm. Demko is part of the reason they lost last night.
There's shared blame yesterday.
Yep. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
And Texter, you are free to disagree with us. That's fine. I see Demko as part of the problem last night, but he wasn't the only problem last night. They were sloppy. They just weren't good enough. Not enough attention to detail around their own net many times as well. One of the things I've heard Brian Burke say, and he's not alone, but he's, look, a couple of things you can watch during games to tell you which team is just more engaged. And you can call that hungrier, you can call it wanting it more, you can label it whatever you want. But if you want to see the team that's a little more engaged, watch when pucks are chipped in, which teams are retrieving those and winning those puck battles, and watch faceoffs. And watch how hard wingers come in and defensemen come in to help win faceoffs that are 50-50. You watch those, it'll give you a pretty good indication. Ottawa was better in those departments last night.
Mm-hmm.
50-50 puck battles, just got there a little quicker. Loose puck, just got there a little quicker. And the Canucks weren't able to have a long sequence where they were pouring it on until it was just a little too late and they couldn't quite get the job done.
I'm just trying to think of moments when any line outside of the top line. They had a great shift in the third period, a decent one in the second period. But, yeah, by and large.
Yeah, I can think of a couple. I can think of one where puck on net, Gaudette gets to a rebound, Hoberg makes the follow-up stop. But those were very infrequent.
Yeah, there was a lot of turnovers in transition, which really killed them, obviously, on the first goal, right? Toffoli with the turnover. Bo Horvat with the turnover. And, you know, Myers gets crossed up somehow with Fantenberg, and he chases all the way across.
That was a tough pairing last night.
Ooh. Fantenberg with his own turnover. Like, there was a lot
that
of
that pairing struggled last
night. Actually, I guess Toffoli had the turnover on the third goal, right? There was a lot of just bad puck handling, and it led to bigger issues that we're talking about. And, you know, on the idea of hustle plays, this texter, I still can't get over Roussel not changing, then trying to force that cross pass through the middle and killing the offensive zone pressure. And then, you know, he was lackadaisical going to the bench at times. And, again, there was a moment earlier this year when there was a five-alarm loss. I can't remember which one specifically, but we were kind of doing the panic meter, right? Mine was at, like, two. And I recall a lot of textures. It's like, how can you be at two? The thing I kept saying is, it's November. When it's winning time, I'll raise my panic meter. And I'm not panicked, but this is a time to be more forceful with your critiques. Because it matters at this time to start correcting all those mistakes.
There is plenty of time to salvage this road trip.
Yep.
We're going to come in here on Monday, and you may feel entirely differently about this team than you do right now. And that's just the nature of this race, and we've talked about it so many different times. You don't like the weather, wait a week. That's what it feels like in the Pac-5 race. So Vancouver could win these back-to-backs this weekend, and you feel great on Monday. Or they could lose both of them. And you'll be, what's going on with the Canucks? They lost the last three games on this road trip. That is the bigger issue I have with the Ottawa loss last night. It's a game in hand on teams like Edmonton, on teams like Vegas, if you're still pursuing. Also an opportunity to distance yourself from that wild card conversation, which kind of getting played back into right now.
Especially with a three-point game last night.
There's also the totality of the road trip. Yes, we'll get to that in just a second, that three-point game in Nashville last night. There's also the totality of the road trip. And we saw this before. The Canucks started that last five-game road trip great. Two straight wins, shootout loss in Carolina. No big deal. They're still 2-0-1, and then they dumped the last two games, and what could have been a great road trip was just average. You win that game in Ottawa last night, which you should, but they just didn't take care of their business, and you guarantee yourself a 500 road trip at worst. Now, you're going to have to fight a little bit to be 500 or better.
Mm-hmm. Do they always need the light of that fire, though? Because, you know, you should be starting to put together consistent performances at this stage.
Of course. Of course.
And
absolutely you should.
Is this just what a middle 10 team looks like, right? And I've restated this many times. My expectation on the beginning of the year, they were around 19. By the end of the year, I want them to be 12-9, the best team. And so they're in that middle 10. And generally speaking, those teams are consistently inconsistent. And at what point do we get frustrated with that, or is there just an acceptance on our part that we have to just understand that it comes with that territory?
No, you can be frustrated. You can be frustrated with it because you should see growth of a team throughout the course of a season. So, yeah, there are parts on this team that are always going to be inconsistent just based on the nature of the player. There are certain guys who just, you know, are going to be volatile stocks.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, you should see a more consistent product for the Vancouver Canucks. It's something that they've done well overall this year is when there have been some swings as far as consistency. And there's been that, what happens now? Your feeling as a fan when it's hanging in the balance, they've been very, very good at quashing that in relatively short order. And we'll see if they do that this weekend. We'll see if they get there. You mentioned the game last night in Nashville. That's a tough one for Canucks fans to take. It's a tough one for the Pacific Division to take overall. That was a 3-point swing last night in 0.1 seconds.
In less than a minute, basically.
Not that you're cheering for Calgary necessarily in the Pac 5 race. Point is, Calgary wins that game in 0.1 seconds. They get 2 points. Nashville gets none. They're 4 points up, and the playoff bar looks a little different. All of a sudden, Calgary loses that game in overtime. They get a point closer to Vancouver and Edmonton. Nashville jumps up 2 points. Winnipeg wins last night as well, and it's looking a little more congested all of a sudden.
It is tight. Again, it's 72 points for Winnipeg. Nashville also has 72. And Calgary, 73 by themselves. And, you know, with the way Edmonton played the other night, 74 for them, 74 for Vancouver.
Edmonton, Winnipeg, by the way, play tomorrow night. Winnipeg shut out the Caps 3-0 last night, and they're right there.
Was there an update on Patrick Laine?
I have not seen one as of yet. Last I heard from Paul Maurice was that the x-rays came back negative, so nothing's broken, but they didn't have a further update, and they were planning on taking him on the trip, which is only a one-gamer, so it'd be pretty easy to leave him at home, but they were planning on taking him to Edmonton.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that. This is, you stated it weeks upon weeks ago, like, let's get comfortable with being uncomfortable because this is going to be a fluctuating race. And that's why a night like last night is so frustrating. It's there was your chance to provide yourself with a cushion and put some distance between you and Edmonton.
And yet easier to take because of the Bobby Ryan story. I believe that for a lot of Canucks fans. What a great story last night. And I threw this out there earlier and I've had mixed reviews on the question. I expected to get them. As a Canucks fan, knowing what you know now, would you cash in would you trade 2 points? Would you say, I'm willing to give up on 2 points to get that human story? And I've had mixed. I've had some people say, yeah, you know what? It's so much bigger than hockey, and that's what I'm here for in sports. So, yes, I'll give up the 2 points and try to get them somewhere else. And I've had others say, I had one text saying I would step over my own grandmother for 2 points. Wow. So, no, I would not do it. And it's difficult for you and I to answer. We're media.
Yeah.
We generally cheer for the best possible story. So, yeah, it's easy for me to sit here and say, absolutely.
You're really twisting people's moral compass with their fandom.
Yes.
It's cold-blooded, Scott.
That's part of it, man. What a great story last night. It really was. It was heartwarming.
You can't top that, man. Like, that's...
Thought it was great.
As I was saying last night, so much of sport is community, right? And think of playing as a kid, right? And as a parent, think of all the other parents and you form friendships, you form bonds with as part of a team, as part of a community. And here's this guy who, as he said with Murph, and I thought his walk-off with Murph was fantastic. Like, he took it all for granted, a lot of it for granted. And it was a guy who, A, felt grateful to be back in the spot, felt humbled to have his name chanted, and he's gone through a lot of struggles, not even just personally, just on the ice, contractually. It's not as if they were the biggest fans of Bobby Ryan. And to have that moment.
We played that clip at the start of the year.
Yeah.
Remember we had a little fun with that? Because somebody asked him, you know, your contract, are you kind of bogged down by it? And he said, he had the opposite. No, my contract's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. I'm making all this money. Like, he had some fun with it. But you're right. There was a lot of pressure because of that.
To have it, you know, go down the way it did and for him to come back, it's a human moment. And that's what's so great about sports. It unifies us and we can all relate to the specificness of that incident of, okay, we've all been in dark spots. We don't necessarily have a platform that he has to be in front of thousands of people and recover, but we've all been in a spot where, hey, if we recovered and we had our own shining moment, it'd be nice to feel that redemption.
You're right. Nobody, very few, I should say, have the platform that Bobby Ryan has, but what it was to me was a symbol of, look, as bad as things get, this is what can be on the other side. Not because you get adulation from sports, but you have this support and there is a community available to you. And I hope that people who have their own struggles and are fighting their own demons saw that as such an example last night. I really do. Bobby Ryan had the other great quote that wasn't in Merce's interview, but after the game he was asked about, does he believe in hockey gods because of what happened last night? And he said, yeah, I do, but I didn't think I'd be on their good side for everything that's gone on in my personal life the last little while, but I guess they granted me some reprieve and gave me a good night. He seemed genuinely grateful.
Yeah.
He seemed so genuinely grateful for what this has become for him.
And when you think of all these events that are at games, you know, Hockey Cares, all these things, the mental health initiatives, all of them are conduits to express to playing staff, members of the public, whoever, that if you feel troubled by something, like, you can seek help. There are avenues and people to support you. Bobby Ryan initiated one of those programs, came out through the other side, and look at the support. The support will always be there if you are willing to embrace it.
This text comes in, no one would care outside Vancouver if it was a Canucks player, so why should we care? You can care if you want. People outside of Vancouver, if this were a Canucks player, absolutely would care. You see the support that Rick Rippon's story gets still to this day. Do you remember the support across the hockey world it got when, after Luc Bourdon's passing, Alex Burrows fired the arrow into the sky? Those things transcend loyalty to a team. They do. They're bigger than it. So I completely disagree with it.
Yeah, it's so bizarre to say that, you know, nobody would care. The whole point of this is hockey is a community outside of just these 31 cities that they're in. Everybody recognizes when something happens. And think of AHL moments, right? People rallied when those moments. You know, that's like saying, you know, trying to think, like Craig Cunningham. Like, was that not a hockey moment? That's part of it too, right? It's this community rallies when one of its members need each other.
Of course, I agree. Hockey fans care, people care. That's from Leaf fan Steve. Completely agree. You mentioned rallying. You mentioned exemplary moments in sports. There was one 10 years ago today. Mm-hmm. I'll get you to share your story where you were February 28th, 2010, when Canada won the gold medal here in Vancouver in a second. But first, a guy who was on that team, Chris Pronger, joined me earlier. Asked him about the pressure leading up. Man, this country was anticipating that game so much, and everybody wanted that gold medal. What was it like for him? What was it like for the team?
You know, the pressure always ramps up, you know, as you get closer to the end result, the goal, which was the gold medal. You know, pressure ramps up. But once you start playing the game and get immersed in the action, you're not really focused on, you know, what's at stake at the end of the game. You're just busy focusing on playing the game the way you know how, and your mindset is shift to shift, and your sole focus is that. You're not really thinking too far ahead. And you know, I think that's what was great about that team is we were just constantly just, what's in front of us? All right, let's navigate through this and stay focused on what's right in front of us. Don't look too far ahead and don't look careful. Look straight ahead.
You take care of Slovakia on the Friday, and then you got to wait till Sunday to play. And I know it's an earlier game on this Sunday. And maybe it's easier for you, Chris, because you'd been through Olympics before and you'd won a gold medal before, but the whole country was buzzing with anticipation for that whole Saturday and leading up. What was it like waiting around to play that gold medal game?
Yeah, well, you know what? It wasn't bad. Everything was so jammed together that it was nice to get some time off to kind of recharge and you know, nurse the bumps and bruises and kind of get prepared and kind of go through our pregame and you know, map out matchups and who's going to play against who and line combinations and what'd we do last time that worked and didn't work and all the rest of that stuff. You know, I think having that extra day to really map that out helped us and allowed us to play a really good game.
It's all going according to plan. It's 2-0. It's 2-1. No big deal. Canada will close us out. It's on home soil. 25 seconds to go. The Americans tie it up. You tell me, what was it like sitting in the dressing room after giving up that late goal and you're waiting around for overtime?
You know what? It wasn't bad. It was, I think when you look at the experience we had in the locker room, the types of players we had in the locker room, I wasn't too worried. I think we all knew what was needed. You know, Scotty obviously got up and said a few words. I said a couple words. And really, you know, when you looked around the locker room at the guys, there was no defeat. There was nobody that felt you know, the look on their face said it all. We didn't think we were going to lose. We had come too far and played too well to let that happen. And I think we all realized that there was going to be a hero in the locker room. It was just a matter of going out there and figuring out who it was going
to
be.
Well, I can tell you that's how it felt in the arena as well. I was there, I was at the game, and I can remember talking to people saying, not on our ice, like not in this country. Was that kind of the feeling in the dressing room? Like, hey, I know anything can happen in overtime, but we're in Canada, man. We get this job done here.
Yeah, I don't know if that crossed our minds. I think it was just a matter of, you know, we're better than that team. You know, we felt we were better. We felt we could beat them. And we weren't going to let them dictate otherwise. You know, we were going to go out and win the game. We weren't going to go out and lose the game. And we certainly weren't going to play scared like we did in 98, where we did everything to not lose instead of everything to win. I don't think we were worried about winning or we weren't worried about losing. We were focused solely on winning. And I think that's the difference between the two teams. You know, and I think something that we learned over time is that you got to play to win. You can't play to lose.
Good interview with Chris Pronger. It's available on our website, sportsnet.ca/650. He also went on to say, you know, hey, nothing I could have done about it. Kind of alluding to the fact he wasn't out there for the game tying goal, which surprised me. And he went on to say, it kind of sticks in my craw to this day that I wasn't out there to prevent the game-tying goal, but it's a little easier when you win. It's okay at that point.
Yeah, you can get over it. And, yeah, just you know, one of the best Canadian sporting moments of all time. It's
where were you?
I was just starting my radio career, so I was up north in Grand Prairie with a bunch of friends. And, yeah, it, seated in as tense could be. And
you probably remember everybody that was there.
Yeah, and they won't stop talking about it, the people that were there, because, you know, when that goal was scored, I don't even know how I did this, but, again, I was seated and sprung to life, and I jumped across the room, and in one fell swoop almost fell into the TV. and so, yeah, like, I've gotten 5-6 messages from today. People like, hey, remember that time you jumped in the TV? And, yeah, from across the room, it was like 9-10 feet away. I don't know how I did it. But, yeah, it was – I'm sure that was a similar reaction across the entire nation, everyone springing to action together.
That reminds me of a Super Bowl I was at with a big Rams fan. Remember what the year they won?
Yeah.
Beat Tennessee. My buddy's big Rams. You remember the celebration they often did, the bob and weave in the end zone?
Okay.
Guys had a couple of pops.
Oh, no.
Bobbing and weaving hits the TV, and it was one of those big ones, and it rocked back and forth, and it didn't fall down, but he blew his ankle out that day. He wasn't fully able to enjoy his Rams Super Bowl victory.
Incredible.
Because he hammered his ankle on the bob and weave. This text comes in. February 28, 2010, I was in Maui with my family, sitting at a restaurant watching the game with one other Canadian family, the other crowd predominantly American. It was a very proud Canadian moment for us families that were representing Canada. They are fond memories indeed. It's one of those dates. You know exactly where you were. You know who you were with. You can remember so many of those details. As I said, you probably don't remember what you had for lunch yesterday, but you can remember that day. And you will describe it to your family, to your friends, kids, generations to come when you're asked about it at some point in time.
Well, for sure. It's there was probably more historical significance behind Summit Series, but that's like this generation's version of that.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not sure if there was more pressure in 2010 than 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't won in 50 years,
yeah.
Coming off of Nagano. That one felt more tense. Going into 2010, I was so convinced Canada was going to win, whereas in 2002, it was like, ooh, are they going to get this done?
There was an expectation that they were going to win on home soil. Of course, the own the podium stuff and all of that went into it as well. And that's why that overtime was so tense, right? I can't believe they tied it. Like, they should have closed it out. What's going on here? And, you know, Luongo makes a save in overtime, goes back the other way, and, of course, they end up winning it. 2002 was definitely...
It's tense, man.
Yeah. I don't know if the expectations were gold. Obviously, everybody wanted gold, but winning that one was probably a bigger relief. 02.
Oh, yeah.
Because it took 50 years of history away.
I was 12 at the time, sitting with my family. I remember crying after that goal. Being that young and watching your country was fantastic. Keep the texts coming in.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, it was the perfect cherry to two awesome weeks. Again, I wasn't here for the Olympics. One of my great regrets, but watching from afar, it you couldn't have put a better exclamation point on the Olympics.
Where did Alex Auld watch the game from? He will join us next. We'll talk about what's happened on this road trip with the Vancouver Canucks and his Olympic memory from 2010 as well. That is next on Canucks Central, on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Canucks Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Some great stories coming in. This is Canucks Central, and yes, we're going to talk Canucks hockey, but this is also the 10-year anniversary of the Golden Goal. It happened here. Euphoria ensued across this country, certainly across the Lower Mainland, and a lot of your stories are coming in. Jay and Burnaby, when Crosby scored, I was in a portable tent with 1,000 other kids about to run on stage for the closing ceremonies in BC Place. The whole place shook with the cheering and the jumping. Jimmy says, my cousin was on a flight back from the States with lots of Americans on the plane. When Crosby scored, every Canadian was standing and cheering and high-fiving each other, even the airline employees, hopefully not the pilots.
James, I was working, trucking across Ontario, stopped into a truck stop just in time to watch the game in the driver's lounge. In the lounge with 40 or so other drivers. Standing room only. Crosby scores. Euphoria. Manager told everyone in the lounge, free pizza, hot dogs, and sodas.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. And we've had stories from across the province saying, hey, I was in a small town. Our town actually had a big event at the high school gym that day because we're in a really small community. So everybody got together and we watched the game together and we played floor hockey after. I just love stories like that. And this is what sports is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, today, for me, is what sports is all about. Yes, it's about the tension when the big game is happening and living and dying on every shift and every goal and every shot. But it's also about having indelible memories that when anniversaries like this roll around, you can share your passion and then you get instantly transported back to that place with the people you were with. And there's a feel about it. And the camaraderie and unity that it fosters in a forum that we have here, I love it.
Yeah, the memory just it triggers everything you're talking about, that feeling, what it smelt like where you were, right? It just triggers everything. There's always this guy, Paul and Abby, 650-650. Not sure if anybody has mentioned this, but if the game had not been tied and sent to overtime, the Golden Goal would never have been.
It's true.
It's true.
Accurate. No question.
You know, now that we know it went in, you take it.
Of course.
You still kind of want to win the game in regulation.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. Hey, the Dragon Slayer goal never happens if the Canucks don't blow a 3-0 series lead and lose a lead late in regulation. But you get the Dragon Slayer goal.
Yeah.
So you're okay with it. Alex All joins us now. You haven't slayed any dragons today, have you?
No, not yet. We'll see what this afternoon brings. But as of now, I don't even know. I don't even know what to say to make that funny, but I haven't, Scott.
Hey, you've got kids, man. They might ask you to do something like that today. You never know what kids are going to say.
That's a good point. You never know. And tonight, little Friday, I've actually been out of town all week. I'm back last night, so kind of nice to hang out with the kids. I'm sure we'll play something make-believe, so who knows what'll come.
Where were you for the Golden Goal in 2010?
New York. I was in. I just got picked up by the Rangers, and it was a lot of fun because actually I was playing with a guy from my hometown, and Mark Stahl, and his brother Eric, obviously, was on Team Canada. So we were watching it in a sports bar in Manhattan, a number of guys on the Rangers. And it was pretty exciting because of the fact that we're obviously in New York. When Parise ties it late, the bar erupts. And then when Canada wins it, when Crosby scores the goal, we kind of are even more over exuberant because it felt like everyone was kind of rubbing it into us that the U.S. had tied it. So we were pretty pumped, and it was pretty cool to watch a guy I grew up with win it, and obviously Team Canada, and then obviously the memories I had because being a former Canuck and watching what it meant to the city of Vancouver and the whole Olympics and that tournament especially.
So who from the Rangers would have been on that American team, Callahan and Drury?
Yeah, that's right. So it was interesting to me because it's like I joined them sort of during the Olympic break. I got picked up after. So there's like the Olympic break that is the mandated time off for the players who aren't playing in the tournament. So I joined the team after that. So there was a few days of practice without all the guys that were away at the Olympics. And then, it didn't have the same feel for me in terms of, because I wasn't on the team as guys were being named, if that makes sense. So it wasn't like you remember it so well when you're on a team with a guy as they get named to something like that. But yeah, those two for sure were there. And then obviously there were a number of guys in the tournament on other countries. But as far as the American side, those are the two I can remember.
Alex Hall joins us here on Canucks Central, as he does every Friday. It's a nice segue into what happened last night in Ottawa, and we'll talk about the Canucks' participation in the game. But the Bobby Ryan story, threw it out there to Canucks fans today. Would you trade in the 2 points to get that story? Just kind of wanted to see where Canuck Nation was at. I know it's easier for us, Aldi, and you're a human interest guy first and foremost, but man, that was heartwarming.
Well, absolutely. And I think it's you know, anytime you can see, so, and like you said, I'm a sucker for that, the human interest side of things. Anytime you can see somebody who, it just takes you beyond the game, beyond the wins and losses, beyond the sport. It connects people. It also, I think anytime you're dealing with anything that's sort of outside the normal realm and into, you know, the year 2020 now, and we're looking at so many things that surround, whether it's injuries, mental health, so much awareness about just more the holistic side of an athlete or a person or an entertainer or someone you like and follow. There's something so special when they're able to overcome something in a moment. And in sports, there's this direct parallel between, you know, the real life family aspect and all of those things to some competition and celebration on the field or on the ice. So pretty cool to see that. It definitely was something that you like in a lot of different ways.
You see the hockey world rally around it last night, and everybody's talking about it today. But I also think that we always talk about the downside with fans and how crazy they get and how upset people get. And, hey, it's just a game. I think last night as well, Aldi showed you just how important fans can be.
Well, that's true. You know, and that is one of the things I always have thought about, especially playing in some high-pressure markets, playing in Canada. There is a level of negativity that goes along with the scrutiny and the added pressure, but you're going to also bask in the really good times. And good times can be something like a team having a great playoff run and the excitement that's in a market. And been hearing a lot about that here in the last little bit about Vancouver and how it comes alive in playoff time. And some of the good times can be some positive moments through some hardship and some very difficult things. Like if you look at a guy like Saku Koivu in Montreal, I mean, he went through some extremely difficult things around his cancer treatments and everything. But that also, in the way he gave back to that community in Montreal through his hospital donation and put them on the forefront of cancer research in Quebec, that is something that has tied him forever to that market. And also, I remember being in Montreal at the Bell Centre as a member of the Canadiens when Saku Koivu made his return, and it was such a special moment. And it's that went beyond the game, went beyond the sport. And it's this relationship that players have with the fan base. And I think any time that, you know, fans look at these players as heroes, they look at them as larger than life in so many moments. Yet when the player opens up about maybe a weakness or an issue they're having in their personal life or whatever it may be, it makes them a little bit more of the everyman. And then all of a sudden the fans can really grasp onto that. And they love seeing a redemption story or some success or some personal strength or growth through a moment like that. And that's, I think, what you got to witness last night.
With regards to the game itself, is there such a thing as look-ahead games inside a locker room?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, those can happen. I mean, look ahead games or trap games you just don't, you know, it's such a hard thing when you're playing against teams that are so far below you in the standings, because they're still good teams. They're still National Hockey League players. And you never know what sort of desperate moment you're going to get for an opponent that's down and out or whatever it may be. And they don't look like on paper they should be able to compete. And those games can definitely creep up on you, and you know, a team can come out and full marks to Ottawa, come out and work for what they're going to get and do what they have to do to be successful. And that is part of what makes the league so great, is that on any given night, any team can beat any other team. The last place team could beat the top team on any given night. It's just over the course of the season or a playoff series, that's likely not going to happen. But those games are very difficult. I think that's part of youth. It's part of growing. It's part of evolution. That being said, veteran teams and probably a team that's whoever is going to end up winning the Stanley Cup, if you look back at their season this year, they'll have had a game like that where they've just kind of looked past it or thought of something else or not come quite as prepared as they would have liked.
Yeah, we pointed this out earlier. It's not to excuse the Canucks last night, because they don't have an excuse. They're a better team if they apply themselves, and they didn't apply themselves properly last night, but Detroit's beaten Boston twice. Like, it happens.
Yeah, it does.
And you can move on if you follow it up this weekend and take care of your own business. And that's what the that's what teams like the Bruins do, and that's the challenge that's now in front of the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, and that to me is a bigger part of the evolution in a lot of ways than completely guarding 100% against any letdown, because they're humans. As we just talked about in the first 5 minutes I was on with you, I mean, these are human beings, and there's part of that is dealing with everything else that surrounds the game and always being at your best. I mean, I ask everyone out there, I'm sure your boss would love to hear it, but you're not always at your best at work. And it just so happens that, you know, these guys have, you know, a whole province or everybody watching them. Right. And so the level of expectation is high. Absolutely. But to me, the big separator for the really good teams, and that's where I want to see the evolution, the response. For the most part, the response of the Canucks has been good. We've talked a lot this year about how they haven't let slides really creep away from them and start like a runaway freight train downhill, where it's just like, oh man, the season's done. They've been able to have good course correction. They've been able to have good moments where they bounce back. And sometimes that's on the strength of team play. Sometimes that's on the strength of some great offensive individual efforts. And a lot of times it's on the strength of Jacob Markstrom and the way he's been able to respond and sometimes just have a phenomenal game to stop the bleeding. So for me, it's about the response. It's how do the Canucks come out of that game in Ottawa where they definitely didn't play as well as they wanted and didn't get it in a lot of different areas. How do they respond? How do they go into their next game and follow it up and show that they are learning from the ups and downs of the season and are more often than not are able to have that positive bounce back?
Aldi, as far as fair criticism of Thatcher Demko, what's fair last night?
Well, I think it is fair to say he wasn't at his best. I'm sure he'd be the first one to say, hey, that's not the game I want to have. But look, at the end of the day, you're looking at you obviously want Thatcher Demko to step up and seize this opportunity and play as close to Jacob Markstrom as he can. And that may be doable on some nights. Some nights he's going to be phenomenal. There probably will be a game or two he steals. And that's a great bonus. At the same time, you're looking for him to give the team a chance to win every night, an opportunity to win most nights. And that doesn't mean they're going to win, but are you making enough saves that you're in it late? Are you making enough saves that you're in it through to the end of the game and closed in a bounce here or there? It could be a win, or maybe it's a tie. But when I look at Demko, it's much like the group. It's what's the response like? Because one of the number one traits of a true bona fide starting goaltender in the National Hockey League, it's not that they never play poorly. It's that you can throw them back out the next game and expect a good result. It's not like, oh boy, he had one bad game, now is he going to be bad again? Like, when you think of the premier starters in the league, unless they're in a really difficult stretch, you never really have that consideration. You look bigger picture. You look at a longer run of games. You look at the trend over the last couple of weeks, and oh, like if Jacob Markstrom has one off night, but he's been on a really nice 10-game stretch, you're like, well, conventional wisdom is going to tell me he's going to respond well. So for me, as a young goaltender, is building sort of that resume, building that pedigree, and building up the mindset of being a starter. You go from this, you know, once every couple of weeks type of attitude, and I play, and you know, then I move on from it to okay, now I've got to move on immediately and play the next game. That's a big challenge as well. So for me, it's the response. For me, it's more we have to judge this over the course of a week, 2 weeks, than the whole picture of how long Jacob Markstrom is out to really deem whether Demko was successful in this moment or not. The one thing that I look at, and it's maybe concerning, but then I'll also give you the positive to it as well, is that in each of these games, there's been a goal that you would consider soft. And one that's the term I hate it, and I'm going to say it, is one he'd like to have back. Like, of course, every goalie wants every goal back, and every goal is actually savable, even if some commentators say he has no chance. Like, these pucks are stoppable. But at the same time, I look at who he's trying to replace. Jacob Markstrom, for how many years here in Vancouver, he was plagued with the inconsistency of a bad goal every single game, and he was able to build the tools, build the strength, build the consistency, build his core game through his growth with Ian Clark to almost all but eliminate weak goals from his game. Jacob Markstrom actually leads the league in saving expected shots. Like, I think he has one goal that was scored all season long on shots that were expected saves, which is by far and away the best in the National Hockey League. So when you find the way to eliminate those bad goals, then all of a sudden you're really doing your job, because you're in a position where your team has an opportunity to win most nights because you're saving what's expected. And the point I'm making is that Demko has the skills to do that, and he has the coaching around him, and he has the support around him to be able to get to that point. So I think it's what's fair is that we give it some time. We let it breathe and kind of see what he's able to do the next game and the next game out, and then look at it. Okay, this is how the first week of this sort of Demko era went, and then what's it like in 2 weeks, and look at it a bit bigger picture.
What's underscoring all of this is the weight of expectation, right? Where we are in the season, and now, you know, fans are looking at it. We're finally so close to the playoff finish line, and now they get thrusted in with this new variable, right? Thatcher Demko's got to carry them to the finish line, akin to how you came into the season as well. What did you learn in that process, and also your relationship with the players of, okay, it's kind of on me now. How did that come about?
Well, and this is the one thing that I said, like, you know, last week or earlier this week, I guess, and Sat and I talked about it on the Canucks pod, is like, what's the, you know, a big thing for Demko would be to get success early. And so he was able to get success early by getting that first win. That helps a lot, because the better you do early on, like anything, it builds your confidence, but it also helps people get confidence in you. But I do think Thatcher Demko is a guy who shows up to work every day with the same mindset, the same mentality, something that we made a lot about in the past month or so in regards to the Sedin twins and sort of the culture that they set of rolling with the ups and downs of the regular season and through an NHL career. So that's something you've really got to master, is that, you know, you can play unbelievable one night and get a shutout. It doesn't mean you show up the next day and don't work at all. Even if you get a day off on the ice, there's still the preparation, because it's about your response the next game. And on the flip side, it's the same thing. You shouldn't really be able to tell from a goaltender's expression 2 hours after a game whether he got a shutout or got shelled for 10 goals. There should be some balance to his demeanor and attitude, because it is bigger picture. The thing that was probably the biggest challenge for me personally, when I went from being a guy who was undisputed backup to a guy who was playing every single night, was managing the workload and getting out of the rhythm of all of this extra work that you get used to, and then your body normalizes the extra work after practice, the extra goalie training, plus the extra work that the shooters need. Sometimes it's not goalie specific, but it's this extra load on your body. And you say, all right, like, I can manage that because I don't play very regularly. Then all of a sudden you go to playing each and every night. There's a tendency to be like, all right, I don't want to get tired, so I'm going to back off on some of this work. Balancing the work, balancing the ratio of what you really need in terms of the details in your game and how you're going to go about executing that, but also maintaining your rest. So that work to rest ratio is really important. And that'll be a work in progress, and something that Thatcher and Ian Clark will manage, and Travis Green will be involved in that as well, in terms of days off, maybe just going on the ice alone with Ian Clark, or having just Thatcher Demko at one end with Ian Clark just doing some goalie specific work, or one or two shooters, and then everyone else doing something at the other end. So it's you want to get the most bang for your buck out of the work you're doing as a goalie, and you don't want to get too tired. So it's one of those things where you look at it and you say, hey, you got to manage that. That's something new you need to learn. That was a big issue for me, going from playing once every couple of weeks to playing every night.
Is that the dog or like a Kraken?
No, it was my dog. Yeah, okay. I'm in the office, and we bring Louie into work. And sometimes, you know, it's a high traffic area. Sometimes we get deliveries or pickups, and he lets them know that they aren't all that welcome in the office. I don't know. He's a friendly guy, but anytime you surprise a dog, it can be a little bit sketchy.
Okay, quickly. We promise our listeners the Alex Auld play of the week. I don't know if you're going all the way back to Boston or maybe the overtime winner in Montreal. What is the play of the week?
Look, it's a couple things. It's sort of the player, but Tyler Toffoli, like his fit here, I've really liked that. The way he's having that chemistry with Pettersson and Miller, it's really special to see. Makes me think a couple things about where perhaps Besser will slot in if and when he comes back, and how that's all going to look. But I love the options this creates and his hand eye. I mean, he shows that he's always ready, but his tip goal, that's pretty sweet, boys. Like the way he's able to get his hand on that, or his stick on that puck. And what I love more than anything, even beyond that individual play, is just the way this guy is. He's a goal scorer. And you could see him actually, if he had a long run with those two players, I could see him set career highs in goals, because he's playing with some really elite talent around him. And he's been a really nice addition, really nice fit. And hopefully the rest of the team can figure out, you know, just their play going forward here before there's more injuries and before some of the guys get back. And then they can sort out some roster, because you've got Besser coming back to full Lebo as well. You start thinking about the depth up front not just the top six, top nine. There's some nice pieces if they're able to sustain any type of run into the playoffs.
Screw it. We're going to go over. We asked Colby yesterday what weird situations he's seen in the AHL or ECHL because of the e-bug situation. I'll throw it to you. Not necessarily the e-bug, just what weird, bizarre situations have arisen in your playing days?
In the minors specifically or anywhere?
Just wherever.
Well, to me it is sort of the e-bug scenario in a lot of ways before it was this current iteration of it. But if I don't know if you remember the UBC goalie, Chris Levesque, had a backup. But that all ties into me. I couldn't get here in time to Vancouver. I forget where the Moose were playing, but I landed after the game that night. And that was the Marcus Naslund had four goals that night, actually, 4-3 against Pittsburgh. Might even have been captain. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at that. But, you know, what the interesting thing about it is Johan Hedberg comes out and plays the puck, much like Mrazek does, without an NHL goalie on the bench. Moose broke his wrist on that play. And I remember Brian Burke talking to me and saying, look, like, if you ever in a situation where you don't have an NHL backup on the bench, stay in your freaking net, kid, because you can't do that. And that's exactly what I thought of when Mrazek came out and was doing that spin, was that Hedberg did that. Full marks to Hedberg, though. He stayed in the game with a broken wrist. They didn't know about it until the next day of practice, or after practice when he got an x-ray. But that to me, it just really went back to that time. And the funny story about that is that we had Mike Keane. What a beauty. He was on the bench. And Hedberg's down, the cameraman sitting right beside the backup goalie here in Vancouver. Camera's on Levesque. He's chomping out of the gum. And Mike Keane just skates by and goes, don't worry, kid. He'll get up.
That's great. Aldi, we need you here today. If there's not first class, I ain't flying. You get me on the next plane with first class, and I'll be there. That's what you said, didn't you?
I only fly private back then.
Attaboy.
So, yeah. No.
Baller. Baller. Right. Thanks, Aldi. Yeah.
Take care
of Deming.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we're calling Louie now. It's a different Louie. His dog.
Nah.
He didn't get that one.
Don't be throwing nicknames onto dogs. He's already got a good name.
Yeah, Louis Domingue. Double up.
We'll see him on Sunday.
David Ayers' stick has made it into the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Nice.
They have added that there, and I do want to end on this. So you tell me who's coming up on the program roundtable today, and then I want to get this text in.
Chris Habb going to be joining us later today at 5 o'clock.
Must Listen Radio. It's the roundtable, the Friday roundtable on the program. We asked you for your memories. This one, I think, great, good way to finish the week. My dad and I aren't close. We've been through some rocky times. I decided to watch the game at home with him because he didn't have anyone to watch it with, and I felt bad. When Crosby scores, that's the first time my dad and I hugged in over 10 years. We haven't hugged since, but I'll never forget that moment. That's what it's all about. Have yourselves a great weekend. Reach Deep is up next.